This episode contains descriptions of domestic violence and child abuse that some listeners may find triggering.
Also, we swear. Please be advised.
Imagine an old home movie flickering on a sheet. The scene is a family barbecue. Kids run around playing in the backyard. Mom laughs at their antics. Everyone's having fun, completely oblivious to the Super 8 camera documenting their surroundings. Everyone, that is, except one 12-year-old boy who steps right in front of the lens, front and center. He's tall for his age and kinda lanky. There's something different about this kid. And it's not just that he's wearing cowboy boots thousands of miles from Texas. He looks up and smiles right into the lens. There's a spark in his eye, like he's waiting for you to laugh at a joke he just made. You can tell he's loving the attention of being in front of the camera. But even through his goofiness, there's something about him, something deeper. He's engaging. There's a wisdom behind his eyes that's way beyond his 12 years. But if you look closely, there's a bit of sadness too. Meet Willard Smith II, better known as Will.
Oof, I'll be honest, shortening to Will was a good move.
Ugh, agree, Brookensia. It's the mid-70s, and little Will Smith is watching that home movie with his family in the basement of their snug, immaculate West Philadelphia home. There's only one thing Will loves more than watching himself in these videos, and that's watching his dad watch him on screen. Willard Smith I is known around the house as Daddy-O, but his nickname is just about the only casual thing about him. Big Will is a workaholic and a super demanding dad. But when that Super 8 footage plays in the dark, Daddy-O relaxes, enthralled, a glass of Chivas Regal at his side. Will feels a rush of warmth shoot through his body as Daddy-O laughs at his antics. In moments like this, Will can see how proud his father is of him. For young Will, that's a very big deal, because he knows that soon enough, the Super 8 footage will end, and so will Daddy-O's laughter. Will knows that keeping Daddy-O happy is the most important thing he can do, because the truth is, when the movies aren't playing, life at home is absolutely terrifying. From Wondery, I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And this is Even the Rich, where we bring you absolutely true and absolutely shocking stories about the biggest celebrities the world has ever seen.
It's a show about power, how you get it, how you keep it, and what happens when you nearly lose it all.
It's also about how the rich are just like us, because even the rich fall in love and break up and struggle.
And smoke cigars with Jeff Goldblum after saving the world from an alien attack.
Mm-hmm. Will Smith, the affable, wisecracking, alien-fighting, robot-chasing, overtly dateable movie star. He went from multi-platinum rapper to primetime sweetheart to one of the world's most bankable movie stars. And all while being a husband and father. Will Smith has always been driven towards a very specific version of success. To him, there's no point in doing anything if you can't be the very best. And Will's reputation as a charming, easygoing guy has helped shape his whole career, until now. In March of 2022, Will made headlines after the 94th Annual Academy Awards. And it wasn't for the Best Actor trophy he picked up that night. Instead, his big win was overshadowed when he slapped comedian Chris Rock on stage in front of nearly 17 million viewers worldwide. Will's outburst prompted polarized commentary from celebrities, social media, and news outlets. But the reasons for his behavior that night may be more complicated than we first knew. In this four-part series, we're bringing you the story of the one and only Will Smith. We'll tell you how he pursued his dream of a perfect career and perfect family, how he was driven to find safety through success and accolades, and how he paid the price for allowing his need for control to guide his actions. This is episode one, Made in America. It's 1977, and 9-year-old Will Smith is running across his neighborhood playground in West Philadelphia. Daddy-O's worked his ass off to score his family a place on the tree-lined Woodcrest Avenue. Pretty little grayish-red brick row houses neatly connect to each other, and potted plants and friendly neighbors dot the stoops and porches. It looks like paradise. But for Will, it's a nightmare. Because while the other kids on the playground might be playing basketball or baseball or double dutch, Will's time on the playground is usually spent getting his skinny, nerdy, daydreaming ass kicked.
Let me guess. A couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in the neighborhood.
You know it.
Tale as old as time.
At 9 years old, Will is a bit of an odd duck, and it's definitely made him a bully magnet. That's why he's tearing across the playground, running towards home. Will's big sister, Pamela, is waiting for him when he gets there. Will is sobbing, but Pamela doesn't comfort him. She's fed up with seeing her brother come home like this on the regular. She leans over, looks him in the eye, and asks him through clenched teeth, "Who did it?" Will whispers the names in Pamela's ear. Then he stands on his front porch watching as his sister heads out to track down his tormentors and give them hell.
You know, I love a lady who isn't afraid to beat up some little shits.
Ugh, you and me both. And I mean, yeah, Will does get some satisfaction out of watching her straighten out the playground bullies. But at the same time, he doesn't love that he needs a girl to stand up for him. He thinks boys are supposed to settle their own scores. They're supposed to be tough. And using his big sister as a personal bodyguard makes Will feel the opposite of tough. It makes him feel weak. But what's happening out on the playground is nothing compared to the violence that's happening at home. It's nighttime at the Smith house, and Will is frozen in the doorway of his parents' bedroom, staring at his mother, Mom. She's collapsed on the bedroom floor, and she's spitting blood. Daddy-O is standing over her drunk, breathing heavily and getting ready to throw some more punches. Will is close enough to his mother to help her. And even though he's young, he's tall enough to intervene. But his body is totally paralyzed by fear. Will wants to help. He loves Mom more than anything in the world. But he can't move. So, he just watches. A voice in Will's head yells at him. "Help her! You're the eldest son! You need to be strong!" But Will doesn't budge. He just stands there wide-eyed as his little brother Harry sprints into the room and lunges at Daddy-O. But Daddy-O just swats his son away. And as Mom continues to bleed on the floor, Will can feel Harry's young eyes staring at him, begging him to do something. Will tenses his muscles. He shifts on his feet. And he does nothing.
Jesus, that is too much for a kid to deal with.
It really is. And this night becomes the pivotal moment of Will Smith's life. This is the moment that an avalanche of warped and unfair expectations take root in his psyche. All he can hear in the back of his mind is that little voice, and it keeps telling him he's weak, he's a coward, and worst of all, he's a failure. So that night, Will makes a promise to himself. Somehow, some way, he's going to prove that he is not a failure. Proving you're not a failure at age 9 is easier said than done. especially in a house with an abusive, alcoholic dad. Because Daddy-O's not just abusive towards his wife, and he's not just abusive when he's drunk. It's almost like Daddy-O has a deep-seated terror inside him. And when it comes out, whoever's in his blast radius gets hurt. Like the time Daddy-O caught Will playing with a Nerf football in the street outside the house.
Oh my God, how dare he?
I know, the audacity. But in Daddy-O's head, there are no misdemeanors in life. And Will was supposed to be getting him his cigarettes from the corner store.
Oh, okay. Are Daddy-O's fucking Legios broken? Also, should a child be buying cigarettes?
I mean, no, but it's 1978, so kids could still do that then.
Oh my God.
But because Will's just a kid, he gets distracted easily. And that's exactly what happens when he sees some neighborhood kids playing with what he thinks is the most amazing invention he's ever seen. The scientist in Will is fascinated. The Nerf ball is kind of squishy, so playing with it won't hurt in the cold Philly winters. As far as toy technology goes, this is top tier. But Will is so entranced by the new ball that he forgets his errand completely. 20 minutes later, Daddy-O appears bare-chested. And he's angry. Will's friends scatter, terrified, as Daddy-O marches towards Will in the street. As soon as Will sees the look on his dad's face, he knows he's going to get hurt. Daddy-O was in the military, and he lives his life by the principles he learned there. In Daddy-O's mind, he didn't send Will on an errand. He sent him on a mission. And when Daddy-O gives you a mission, you do it, and you do it perfectly. It doesn't matter whether it's cleaning your room, scrubbing the toilet, or doing the dishes. And this time, Will failed the mission. Daddy-O gets right in Will's face like a drill sergeant. He screams at the top of his lungs, "What the hell are you doing?" Will tries to explain about getting distracted by the football, but his words all mash together. Daddy-O keeps screaming, "What did I tell you to do?" Will freezes. He knows better than to open his mouth at this point. "Who's in charge? Who's in charge? You or me?" Will's heart pounds in his ears. He's shaking. He's scared.
"You are, Daddy."
"That's right, because if two people are in charge, everybody dies. When I send you on a mission, there are two possibilities. One, you complete the mission, or two, you are dead. Do you understand me?"
Oh my God, this guy needs Xanax, not cigarettes.
He really does. And Will understands, but it doesn't matter to Daddy-O. He drags Will home, makes him take his pants off, and beats him with a belt on his bare skin. Despite how much Daddy-O scares him, Will absorbs his father's quote-unquote lessons. Because that's what kids do. Daddy-O's favorite saying is, if two people are in charge, everybody dies. But he's also partial to 99% is the same as zero.
Okay, well, 99% is an A+, so.
Yeah, well, not to 10-year-old Will Smith. To him, it's an F. And even though Will desperately wants to feel like he's worth something, he's still failing. It's the summer of 1981. Will is 12 years old, and things are looking up. For starters, he's rocking the sweet pair of cowboy boots he always wanted.
All right, I'm just going to say it. Too many of our stories involve cowboy boots.
Yeah, agree. At least they're not Crocs, though.
Amen.
But Will thinks these boots are the height of fashion. And if anyone can pull them off, it's Will Smith. Will's new footwear is courtesy of Daddy-O. He owns an ice business, and during the hot Philly summers, it does well. So well that Daddy-O can even afford his very own Kodak Super 8 video camera. And he's thrilled. When he was a kid, Daddy-O wanted to be a photographer. But that dream got squashed. Hard. His parents didn't think playing around with a camera counted as work. So it's been a long time since Daddy-O's been creative with a camera. But Will notices that the Super 8 brings out a side of his father he's never seen before. Daddy-O is calm when he's shooting with his new camera. But more than that, he's happy when he's re-watching the videos on the projection sheet in the basement. And even as a cowboy boot-wearing bully magnet, Will knows how to work a camera. The more Will performs his silly skits and stunts for Daddy-O in front of the camera, the more he realizes it's a way to control his dad. Daddy-O's happy when Will's being funny. And when Daddy-O's happy, he's not hurting Mom. It's a mind-blowing revelation for Will. And he forms a new persona around the discovery. Upbeat, joyful, and always ready with a joke. This version of Will makes him feel a bit stronger. A little more brave. A little less like a failure. And it dawns on Will, he wants to feel like this all the time. It's the summer of 1983, and 14-year-old Will Smith has never felt cooler in his life. He's walking side by side with his 18-year-old cousin, Paul. Paul is tall and confident. He's got a huge afro, deadly martial arts abilities, and an attack-trained German shepherd.
Okay, I don't know if an attack dog is necessary, but this guy does sound pretty badass.
Yeah, agree. And Will thinks so, too. He hasn't seen Paul in a few years. And in that time, Paul has grown up and gotten into some trouble at home in New Jersey. So in a bizarre case of life imitating future art, Paul's been sent to live with his auntie and uncle in Philly.
So Will is the Carlton in this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I think Will would definitely have identified with Carlton. He was a bullied, awkward kid, and his coolest shit cousin Paul moving in with him is validating. Will's always been into school, but Paul feels like a gateway to a new kind of education. Will feels like he has a ton to learn from him. He loves that Paul is into kung fu and anti-racist causes, but Will is especially fascinated by the way his big cousin handles Daddy-O. The ice business is busy. Daddy-O is yelling again. He's loud, angry, and cursing. No matter how many times Daddy-O gets like this, when it happens, Will is always in his head, trying to figure out how to fix the situation. He tries to stop things from escalating further. He runs through scenarios of how he can distract, deflect, and entertain Daddy-O, all while trying to tamp down the panic rising in his chest. Basically, Will's trying not to get hit. As Will goes through his mental checklist, he looks over at Paul, who looks as cool as Daddy-O's ice. Paul isn't scared at all. While Daddy-O screams and stomps around, Paul just watches him. He's calm and still. And somehow, that makes Paul seem like the dangerous one. Will takes in every detail of his cousin's body language. He's in awe of the quiet confidence and power that Paul radiates. Paul just holds Daddy-O in a steady stare, like he's telling the old man, "I'll respect you and your authority, but don't get too close or else."
Damn.
Totally. And Daddy-O leaves Paul alone. And Will's like, "Whatever that swagger is, I need some." So then Paul's like, "Sure, here you go." And he hands it to him.
He gives him the attack dog?
Mm-hmm. Not quite. He does give Will something incredibly powerful, though. Something that will change his life forever. He hands him a mixtape. When Will pops the mixtape into his boombox, it's like the clouds part and a ray of sunlight shines down on his face. He hears the sound of hip-hop. And with every track he listens to, all his fears and insecurities lift off his skinny shoulders. If Paul's quiet strength could be turned into audio, it would sound like hip-hop. Hey, you there on the wall. Will is immediately obsessed. Grandmaster Flash, Bell Mel and the Furious Five, the Treacherous Three, Kool Moe Dee battling Busy Bee Starsky. Will starts to understand how a DJ can work with an MC as they rap and amp up the crowd. Together, they create a special kind of synergy and bounce off each other. Will's favorite artist is Grandmaster Caz and the Cold Crush Brothers. He loves how Caz can command an audience with a story in his rhymes. And he especially loves how witty and funny he is. With Caz, there's no anger, just strength and total control. The poetry and artistry of Caz's music fires Will up. So soon he starts writing his own rhymes. He even starts to get pretty good. By 1984, 16-year-old Will is a newly licensed driver and a legit hip-hop MC working under the name The Fresh Prince.
Damn, that name is tight.
Yeah, it is. Will Smith might have spent most of his life feeling terrified from the constant bullying and abuse. But The Fresh Prince? He's confident, strong, cool, intelligent, and funny. His ability to destroy his challengers in rap battles makes him super popular. He's on top of the world. Nothing can stop The Fresh Prince. Except maybe Will Smith.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. Yeah. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
It's 1986, and 18-year-old Will is 2 hours early to his friend Judy's birthday party. Will's hip-hop career hasn't exactly exploded. Sure, he's incredibly talented, and he's undefeated in high school hallway rap battles. But other people in the hip-hop community are finding Will a little challenging to work with. After he was invited to join a crew called Hypnotic MCs, he went a little 99% is the same as zero on them. Will wanted rehearsal schedules, commitment, and dedication. Suffice it to say, he was a little out of step with the early 1980s hip-hop ethos. It was all a bit much for his new colleagues. Which is why he's here at Judy's place, 2 hours before the party, alone. But he's not performing today. Judy's party used to be his gig. But this year, she's hired someone else. And Will wants to scout his new competition. He's planning to take some notes before he kicks the guy's ass in a rap battle later.
I mean, you know my motto. If a party doesn't end in a rap battle, it's not a party.
Yeah, and the rap battles at your parties suck.
That's because everyone loses, but me.
But when Will gets downstairs to Judy's basement, this new DJ isn't at all what Will is expecting. The guy's small and skinny with zero flash. He looks up from connecting a cable and grins at Will from behind his Coke bottle glasses. What up, man? I'm Jazz. DJ Jazzy Jeff is quiet, unassuming, and sweet. The total opposite of the DJs Will is used to. Will goes from confrontational to curious to really, really excited. Because as time ticks by, Will realizes that Jazzy Jeff's MC is late. Like, really late. And against all his rap battle instincts, Will wants to help. So he makes a choice that will change both his life and the course of hip-hop history forever. Hey, I'll rock with you till Ice gets here if you want. That night, in Judy's basement, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince spark something incredible.
Okay, but when does DJ Jazzy Jeff get thrown out of the house?
Much later.
Okay.
But as soon as Jeff gets behind his turntables, it's clear he's special. This guy is like a musical encyclopedia. He easily mixes tracks from different genres. Will can tell Jeff's ease comes from dedicated practice and experience. He's found a kindred spirit. Jeff is just as intense about his craft as he is. And once Will hops on the mic, it gets even clearer how good Jeff really is. Jeff has a way of anticipating Will's storytelling and rhythms. He adjusts the music to fit Will's lyrics and knows what Will's going to do before he even does it. To Will, it feels like an Olympic game of table tennis. Whatever he does, Jeff matches it, then adds a little more spin. Their volley goes back and forth until Judy's guests are jumping up and down, flipping out. And so is Will. The night feels like magic. Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince fit together like a creative lock and key. Will has never experienced anything like this. It feels like he's discovered something precious that he needs to nurture and explore. That night, Will and Jeff form a team. Together, they decide they're going to create music that will change the world and launch their careers in the process. Will and Jeff work their asses off. They create music together day and night, producing tracks from a setup in Jeff's mom's basement. But for Will, there's nothing like performing live. DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince start popping up all over the Philly party circuit. They play block parties, school dances, proms, birthdays, fundraisers, any gig they can get. The Fresh Prince's raps are sharp, funny, and exciting. And Jazzy Jeff's ability to DJ is fierce. People love them. The response is exactly what Will's been craving all his life. But it's not all love. There's one person who is absolutely furious at Will. His mom. Mm. Carolyn Elaine Smith, aka Mom Mom, is super sophisticated. She plays classical piano and was one of the first Black women to attend Carnegie Mellon University.
Okay, a queen.
Yes. To her, education is everything. In her mind, a college degree is the only thing that will protect Will from the brutal realities of being a Black man in America. She's sacrificed her whole life so that Will can have a better future. And to her, that's only possible if he goes to college. When she hears that Will's been skipping school and bombing tests, she's furious. She feels like Will is betraying everything she's done to help him have a better life. That's why, late one night, she's sitting in the kitchen, waiting for him to get home from a gig. As soon as he walks in the door, Will's heart drops down into his feet. He's been dreading this conversation. He shifts, looking down. He waits for Mom to speak, but she just stares at him. Are you having a problem, Will? Will sticks his hands deep in his pockets. Nah, I'm good, Mom. Mom shakes her head, seething. No, apparently you're having a big problem, or at least you're about to. Mom is the most important person in Will's world. Her love means everything to him. But he also knows that hip-hop is his future. So he tells her that. But it doesn't take. Mom's eyes well up. You can't be a rapper. Mom insists that Will needs to start shaping up immediately. She's going to make sure he goes to college in the fall, come hell or high water. After that night, a long, quiet stalemate settles on the house for weeks. Will truly hears his mom. but he thinks he can achieve everything she wants for him through hip-hop. There's no one he's ever wanted to please more than Mom, and now she's barely talking to him.
I mean, it's got to be hard to not have support from your parents, which is why I'm so glad mine support my rap career.
Everyone needs a fan.
Yep.
But the stalemate just won't end. Until one day, Daddy-O enters the conversation.
Oh, goody. Here comes Smiley.
Well, actually, this time, it is good news. In the kitchen, Daddy-O stands against the stove, staring at Will. He's been deliberating for a week, listening to Mom. He knows how upset his wife is, how disappointed she is in their son. But Daddy-O can't stop thinking about his own past. He remembers how hard it was to have his dreams of being a photographer taken from him. Daddy-O stares hard at Will, and then he lays down the law. You got 1 year. We're gonna help you and support you to do anything you think you need to do to succeed. But in 1 year, if it ain't happening, you're going to go to whichever one of them schools your mother chooses.
Wow, someone finally got that Xanax.
Yeah, Will is shocked. He breaks into this giant smile. A whole year? He's a teenager. A year may as well be a lifetime. And with his dad in his corner, he feels like there's nothing he can't do. But there's one shitty feeling that Will just can't shake. He wasn't there for his mom when she needed him to protect her. And now he feels like he's disappointed her again. Actually, it's worse than that. He's broken her heart. Several months later, Will's back aches as he shovels load after load of ice at his dad's warehouse. It's late at night and he's exhausted. Will has to keep up with his school schedule and work at the ice business until he graduates. Tonight, he's working alone. It's a cool Philly evening, and the only sign of life in the dark warehouse is the music he's blasting. He's tuned in to a local radio show, Power 99's Power 9 at 9, a hip-hop countdown show. Will listens to the show a lot. He uses it to escape while he scoops and fills 200-odd bags of ice during his shifts. As he's scooping and bagging, Will daydreams about his future successes as a rapper. Tonight, though, Will is worried. He and Jeff finagled their way into a recording studio to lay down their first single. It's called Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble. But since then, it's been crickets. As the music of far more successful hip-hop artists rings through the warehouse, Will starts to think that maybe Mom was right all along. He might have to come to terms with the idea that, despite his talent, a career in hip-hop is too much of a long shot. As Will ties off a bag of ice, number two on the countdown begins to play. Will decides he should probably make plans to figure out what college he should attend. As Will mentally enrolls in a business major, he hears the preamble to number one on the countdown. The hairs on the back of his neck start to stand up as the DJ shouts.
The phones have been ringing off the hook all day from y'all wanting to hear these guys, so get ready. For our hometown boys, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble comes in at number one. Somehow, Will has pulled it off. He has no idea how, but he doesn't care. He just loses his goddamn mind.
That's me! I'm on the radio!
Okay, no lie, and this does not happen often. I have goosebumps.
Yeah, so does our executive producer. Will flips out, running around outside the ice factory like a maniac. But as he celebrates this new success, Will knows he needs to act fast if he wants to parlay a local radio hit into a legitimate rap career. Girls Ain't Nothing But Trouble has everything Will loves about Grandmaster Caz in it. It's funny. It's definitely childish. But it weaves the story of a young boy navigating the world for the first time. Like the MC who wrote it, the song is a pleaser. You can't help but love it. And listeners can't help but love Will. And Will loves being loved. The song starts getting radio play, not just in Philly, but also in Delaware, New York, and New Jersey. It's blowing up. Will spends the last month of his senior year with a hit song on the airwaves. Everybody at school hears it, and everyone knows Will and Jeff are going places, and fast. Almost straight after graduation, the Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff set out on their first national tour. They're opening for Public Enemy and 2 Live Crew. It's a huge deal, and they've got a tricked-out tour bus and a massive crew of friends along for the ride. The tour goes better than Will could have ever hoped for. Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince's success skyrockets. They get so big, they start making a national impact. The duo perform with the biggest hip-hop acts of the 1980s. Run DMC, LL Cool J, Houdini, Public Enemy, Sir Mix-a-Lot, Queen Latifah, Salt-N-Pepa. The list goes on. By 1989, their album, He's the DJ, I'm the Rapper, reaches number 4 on the Billboard 200, going triple platinum. And their single, Parents Just Don't Understand, is nominated for a Grammy for Best Rap Performance. At 20 years old, Will becomes a world-famous millionaire.
Okay, so when I was 20, I was flirting with guys on AIM in an apartment my parents helped pay for. Mm-hmm. So basically, we're the same.
Yeah, plus you're a rapper, so.
Right, exactly.
Definitely the same. But one weekend, Will returns to Philly from a tour in the Pacific Northwest. And that's when things start coming undone. When Will arrives back in Philly, he heads straight to his girlfriend Melanie's house. He hasn't seen her in weeks, and he's so excited for their reunion. He's got a literal bounce in his step. He and Melanie have been together since high school, and Will wants to spend the rest of his life with her. He's even bought them a house in Philly, so he and Melanie can start a family and grow old together. Will's big plan is to take Melanie and her aunt to dinner. Then he'll walk Melanie to their new home and right into a bright future together.
Best laid plans of MCs and men.
Tell me about it. Because as Will walks into the house, heads into the kitchen, and lays eyes on Melanie, his inner alarm bells start ringing. His spidey sense is telling him that something is wrong. Specifically, Will knows that the woman he wanted to spend eternity with has cheated on him. He can feel it. And the way he reacts makes one thing clear. There's something very wrong with Will Smith.
When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals more easily and still have the occasional treat.
Exactly. And Chime's here to help you do that. With a Chime checking account, you can make financial progress with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe or getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit.
Yep. So if you set up direct deposit into your Chime account and use an activated debit card, Chime will spot you up to your limit when you exceed your balance.
And I love that Chime never charges fees or interest for using SpotMe. To date, Chime has spotted members over $20 billion.
My God. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/rich. That's chime.com/rich.
Chime feels like progress.
Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Boosts are available to eligible Chime members enrolled in SpotMe and are subject to monthly limits. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com.
We know you have your tried and true closet staples, but it can be fun to switch it up. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada.
Yeah, it's easy to find instant inspiration at Saks.com. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch.
Okay, well, obviously this is making me just want to shop after we record this.
I know, and it doesn't take much for me wanting to shop.
No.
So. But if you're looking for a joyful shopping escape, which we all are,
yes,
then head to Saks.com for inspiring ways to shop for everything on your agenda.
Saks.com.
Will picks up a heavy wrought iron fire poker. He knows he should be feeling some kind of intense emotion, but he feels nothing. He swings the poker and smashes a glass panel in Melanie's aunt's entryway. Then he smashes another one and another. He keeps going until he's standing over a pile of broken glass. Melanie sobs and apologizes. She admits she stepped out on him. But as he watches her cry, Will still feels nothing. His worst fears have been confirmed. The love of his life betrayed him.
Okay, just so I'm clear, he smashes a bunch of shit because he feels nothing?
Yeah. He takes a long last look at what he's done and strides out of the house into the dark night. Will thought he would be walking his future bride into their new dream life together. This wasn't in the plan. Will has a tendency to make super specific, concrete plans in his own head. But then he has trouble letting go of them, which is why his first instinct was to trash Melanie's house. When he gets to his mom's house, Will collapses on the sidewalk. Mom runs out to embrace him. And that's when all the feelings hit. Will sobs into his mother's arms. He feels like his life is over. Despite all his career success, emotionally speaking, Will Smith is still a deeply, deeply insecure guy. And it's only going to get worse. It's a few months later, and Will is in bed. But he's not alone. There's a naked young woman underneath him. Will's hands slip down to her torso as they have sex, until panic streaks his face and he stumbles out of bed. He runs to the bathroom and throws up. Will is grief-stricken, and he's been having violent physical reactions since the breakup with Melanie. He's convinced himself that it was his fault Melanie cheated. If he'd only been a better boyfriend, somehow he could have prevented her from sleeping with someone else.
Jesus, I bet that other woman feels so great.
Yeah, seriously. Will wallows in his agony for months until he settles on a plan. He's going to win Melanie back. He's got a brand new luxury mansion. There's not a girl in the world that wouldn't want to live there. He also has a new Benz 300 CE, which he drives to the clothing store where Melanie works, ready to forgive, forget, and bring her home.
Does she know he vomits during sex now?
Apparently not, because she agrees to give things another try, and she moves in. Back with his first love and with the money pouring in, Will feels like his life is back on track. He's even got an interesting new group of friends. They're into playing pool, partying, and organized crime. They're with an organization known as the Junior Black Mafia. They even have a motto: get down or lay down.
Which I assume is also the motto for your nap club?
You're damn right. But ever since his first success, there have been murmurs that Will and his music are soft. As in, he makes hip-hop for white people. And to a guy who's still beating himself up for being a coward, the criticism hurts. But there's nothing soft about Junior Black Mafia. The JBM operates a huge drug network in Philadelphia. Besides, they're fun to hang out with. They know where all the cocaine is, and Will's house is party central. There are always people there drinking, gambling, and hanging out. And that's how Will likes it.
The life Melanie dreamt of.
Yeah, add vomit, and it's a real dream.
Yep.
She's definitely not a fan of the constant ruckus in the house. And their relationship begins to slowly fall apart again. Because it isn't long before Will realizes that he never really forgave Melanie for what she did. Deep down, Will knows this relationship isn't going to work. So to mend what's missing in his romantic life, he starts buying shit. A lot of shit. Motorcycles, cars, clothes, pool tables, stereo systems, houses, and a fuck ton of Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. Will's spending is out of control. So now he needs money, which means he needs a new album. It's time for the next Fresh Prince and Jazzy Jeff album to be laid down. Will decides that he and Jeff should record in the Bahamas. They get a crew together and head out. The beach is perfect, and Will soaks it in, along with a lot of rum punch, delicious food, and gambling.
Ugh, I'm literally waiting for the day someone suggests we record in the Bahamas.
Yes, I refuse to record anywhere else at this point.
Same.
Will's having a great time and not working at all. The recording stint that has been allotted and paid for by the record company is 6 weeks. But Will and Jeff and their friends fritter the time away. With 2 weeks left, Will and Jeff haven't laid down a single track. Mm. Eventually, their manager makes Will and Jeff pull their shit together and record something. But it's too late. The album is uninspired, if we're being generous. Most people would probably say it just sucks, which means less money for Will and massive amounts of humiliation. It's 1990, and Will is outside his house holding a lit match at 2 a.m. There's a pile of stuff in front of him, clothes, handbags, shoes, and it all looks kind of wet. Will has doused it all in gasoline. Things with Melanie have completely devolved, and he's decided they need to end. As a cab rolls up to the house, Will throws the match onto the pile in front of him.
Oh my God.
As Melanie steps out of the taxi, she watches all of her belongings go up in flames.
Wow.
Will and Melanie never speak again. After the breakup, Will hits rock bottom. He's not just out of money. His net worth is in the red. He owes the IRS $3 million in taxes. To cover the bill, Will has to sell his mansion. His luxury cars and motorcycles are already gone. Not even his credit cards are working. He's struggling to navigate his massive debt. Will is pretty sure things can't get worse. One Monday morning, Will is at his mother's home when a childhood friend pops over for a visit. He's a cop.
Oh boy.
Mm-hmm. Will likes the guy, but this visit feels ominous. After a brief catch-up, the cop asks Will if he recognizes some names. And Will does. They're all junior black mafia guys. Anxiety starts to flood Will's chest, and cop guy can see it all over his face. The cop tells Will that JBM is being watched by the FBI. The feds are getting ready to send as many JBM guys to prison as they can, and Will is on their radar too. Will is frozen. He doesn't know what to say.
Someone needs to call Uncle Phil.
Yes, they do. The cop lowers his voice so Mom can't hear and tells Will, "You need to get away from the junior black mafia. The FBI is coming, and sending a big rap star to prison would just be a cherry on top." Sitting there in his mom's kitchen, Will realizes he's now the very thing he was working so hard not to become. A total and complete failure. All his dedication and talent have been totally squandered by his own impulsive behavior. Will knows he has to do better, to be better. But first, he has to get the fuck out of town. Will is gazing out of a car window as the palm trees of Los Angeles whiz by. On the seat next to him is a paper bag with 10 grand in it. It's a parting gift from a JBM buddy, and the only money Will has to his name right now. Will knows he needs to turn things around. But with his rap career stalled and his relationship over, he has no idea what to do next.
I mean, if this were now, I'd say he should start a podcast with his best friend.
Mm, yeah. Well, and lucky for Will, he has his very own Arisha. And his name is Charlie Mack. So Charlie's worked security for Will, but they've been friends for years. Charlie's 6'7", nearly 300 pounds, and sharp as a tack. He's always had Will's back, and right now is no exception. Charlie's idea is simple. Will has to network, and he knows exactly the guy who can give Will a lifeline. Arsenio Hall. Okay, well, not Arsenio himself, but the soundstage where his show is shot. Charlie tells Will that before the show tapes each day, Hollywood movers and shakers meet there to mingle and plan their world domination. And world domination is precisely what Will is aiming for. A few months later, the whole Arsenio thing isn't really working out. Charlie's been dragging Will here for months, but it always goes pretty much the same way. They arrive, Charlie identifies someone important for Will to meet, and then he hauls them over and introduces the two. Nothing has come out of any of the introductions, and Will still thinks that the whole exercise is a huge waste of time. Today, it's the same routine. Charlie's pulled over a WB executive named Benny Medina. Benny works with Queen Latifah, De La Soul, and Big Daddy Kane. He knows how to get shit done. And apparently, he's a Fresh Prince fan. Will introduces himself, and Benny is charmed. They discuss hip-hop and Will's music. And then Benny asks, "You know how to act?" Will doesn't. At all. But what comes out of his mouth is, "Yes, of course I know how to act." Benny replies, "Great. There's a project I think you might be the right fit for." And he pitches Will on a TV pilot he's got coming up. Will listens politely to the storyline. But inside, he's thinking to himself, "A kid from the hood who moves to Bel Air? Yeah, right.
I mean, finally, this took as long as that cab ride he took from Hollywood to Bel Air."
Even longer, because when Will leaves that night, he's positive he'll never hear a word about that show ever again.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Even the Rich ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This is episode one of our four-part series, Will Smith, Fresh Prince to Fallen King. We use many sources when researching our stories, but we especially recommend Will by Will Smith with Mark Manson. A quick note about our scenes. Some scripted dialogue has been added for narrative cohesiveness. I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin. Mem Kennedy wrote this episode. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design is by Sam Ada. Our coordinating producer is Matt Gant. Our managing producer is Tanja Thigpen. Our senior producer is Ben Gray. Kate Young is our series producer. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.